Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach, the Minisode.
Hi guys.
This is Minisode 2.
Right?
Yeah,
or
2.
3 because
2. No, we only did one mini.
Well, I guess we're not considering our first intro.
Is not,
okay,
yeah.
You're right.
So, if you listened to our last mini, we asked for you to write in to us with some thoughts on voting, some stories about voting,
yeah.
Some opinions, whatever you got, send us what you got. And you did. Some of you did, anyways.
The good ones.
The good ones sent us some stuff. So today,
everyone else needs to do better.
Yeah. So today we're going to be reading your voting stories and thoughts and opinions and wonderfulness. And thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for being wonderful.
When I was a kid at school, learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, if you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
Do-do-do!
We have audio, too.
Yes. Right. Yeah, we have somebody sent in a voice memo.
Yes.
So we're very technologically advanced somehow.
I love audio. I love hearing people's voice. So I'm urging more people.
Anyone but your own.
Yeah.
That's
facts.
Yeah. So we should just get somebody else to read our podcast for us.
Oh, my God. Morgan Freeman, call us. I know you're listening. I like that that's my go-to for my voice.
Oh, boy. Maybe Dolly Parton can do my part.
Yeah, that would be... Oh, what a great podcast. The two of them.
Beyond Reproach with Dolly Parton and Morgan Freeman. Let's read one.
Okay.
So my first one is kind of going to be the longest.
Okay,
or
you
the
go.
Longer. So this is actually my sister wrote in. My sister Jen wrote in.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She has two 17-year-old boys. Reese's girlfriend has been hanging out there a lot. So when Jen was getting ready to vote in the primaries, she had some questions. So Jen kind of wrote in on that subject.
Okay.
So this is from Jen. I just wanted to share with you a recent registering issue I had with a teen of 18. When I asked her if she was registered, she said no. I said, what? Why not? And she said, I don't know how to vote. And Jen said, what the hell do you mean?
Yeah, seriously.
So after taking a deep breath, I sat down with her and we talked. No one has shown her how to register or even what a ballot looked like or explained what her district was. And she had no idea who or what. So this was step one. I pulled out the computer and went through it with her. I even showed her what a ballot looked like and how to fill it out. I thought, wow, this could be very intimidating for a girl of 18 from the country. Then we talked about politics. She had no idea as to what party she swayed with more. So we went through and she decided on Democrats. No persuasion from me. Then she said the most interesting thing I think she has ever said. How do we trust the person we are voting for will do what they have promised?
Ooh.
And if not,
yikes.
How do we...
Kill them. Just kidding.
Yeah. And
Tim,
if not...
edit that out. I don't want that heat.
So how do we trust... I'm lost. I already lost my voice.
I'm sorry.
We're going to just be killing politicians left and right. There's not going to be any left. How do we trust that the person we are voting for will do what they promised? And if not, how do we live with the fact that they lie to us?
Oof,
and
yeah.
We gave them our vote?
Wow.
So
that is a real question.
Yeah.
That was like a kick to the chest.
So what do you tell a girl of 18 years old? How do you Ugh. Even justify that to yourself?
Yeah.
Jen says this is a hard question to answer as an adult and a longtime voter, but to try and explain that to an 18-year-old.
Wow. It's like the world hasn't crushed her spirit yet. Like, should I do it?
So Jen said, you know, someone once told me to pick the lesser of two evils, but that doesn't really resonate with young people. And she says she fully believes, like Stephanie said, that if you don't vote, you can't bitch.
Yes.
So she pulled up her big girl pants and went and voted and did what she thought was best. But getting back to the topic of getting young people interested in voting, it's hard to, like, get young people engaged and try and figure out how to excite young people. And she just wants to know a little bit of our thoughts on this.
How to engage young people.
Yeah.
How to get them excited for voting.
Yeah.
And for being involved in the political process. Ooh, that's a hard question.
Well, I think, so with the on the topic of lying politicians.
Oh.
I think that, I mean, obviously that's a tough question to answer. There's no way that you can know when you're casting your ballot if a politician is going to keep their word or not. But what you can do is pay attention to what they're doing while they're in office, yeah, and then go back and vote them out if they, yeah, lied to you the first time.
Or call them up.
Yeah, yeah.
If we have... see that they voted on something that you didn't support, you don't support, you can call them up.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't end after you leave the voting booth. You have to pay attention to what your politicians are doing and hold them accountable.
Yeah.
And get rid of them if they don't do what they say. Obviously, politicians can't keep 100% of their campaign promises just because there's too many people involved in making these decisions. And Obama, for instance, like, nobody wanted to let him do anything. So he had to choose just a handful of things to really focus all of his energy on just to get something, yeah, done. Because there's no way.
They fought him on everything. Yeah,
exactly. Sort of.
We're not living in a perfect world. Exactly. Is what you're trying to say. Yeah.
Set the bar a little lower.
Yeah.
But as long as they're not going, but yeah, not too low, but as long as they're not going against what they said, like if they said, I'm going to protect, you know, the environment, and then they're like, you know what, let's burn it all down.
Yeah, let's sell it to an oil company.
Yeah, that's different than just not being able to get something done.
Yeah, definitely.
But then on the topic of getting kids excited about voting,
hmm,
I think I said in the last episode, in the last mini-soda, people who are around other people who have friends and family that also are excited about politics and know about politics are more likely to participate themselves.
Yeah.
So I think that's the only thing you can do is just talk to your kids about politics. Like,
And find other people who like talking about politics.
Yeah, exactly. If they don't know anything, you know, I think Jen did the right thing by showing her what a ballot looks like and showing her, getting her registered, showing her how to vote. I did a little bit of research on this based on Jen's questions, and one of the things, too, I read was that kids, obviously teenagers, hate to be embarrassed. And they won't go to the polls if they feel like they're going to look like they don't know what they're doing. So showing them in advance kind of gets rid of that level of embarrassment. And they don't want to look like they don't know what's going on. You know what I mean? Get them informed and then they won't feel weird about it.
I mean, you can join Twitter. That's an easy way, which is, I mean, it can be a little dark sometimes because it's like a giant echo chamber, but there's a lot of young people who are politically engaged.
Can I say something?
Yes, please do. Yeah.
Can I speak into your microphone?
Tim here.
I'm usually silent in the background. I was going to say, I think also just engaging with younger people on issues that they're interested in, or just finding out what they are interested in, even if it seems non-political, and then bridging that gap for them and showing them how their like everyday concerns are actually political concerns.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like 18-year-olds, they're either getting ready to go to college or they're getting ready to join the workforce. Mm-hmm. And both of those things are consistently very important political issues that that are being dealt with, you know, swinging left and swinging right.
Yeah.
And if they better understand those and what they're voting for and how that affects those things, I think they'll be much more raring to go to the polls.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Yeah. Actually, yeah, that was another thing. I lost it in my notes, but there was another thing that I had read that said, you know, obviously, yes, please do talk to your kids about politics, but keep it on a level that they can understand and issues that they're going to care about. Because if you try and talk to a teenager about like
social security, social tax
reform, like tax codes, and that kind of thing,
they're
like, this is, I hate politics. Politics is boring. Yeah. Why do I care? But yeah, if you're talking to them about like, you know, obviously
climate change, things that will affect their
gun
lives,
reform, kids, like deal with guns in a way that we never did when we were in school.
It's become so normalized, which is disturbing on so many levels.
Women's health and women's right to choose is a huge issue that kids probably care about.
Yes.
Kids probably care. I feel like I sound like I'm 97 years old, but
What do the kids, these damn millennials, ruining Thanksgiving, not buying turkeys.
Yes, ruining golf and Applebee's and diamond industry. You know, we're millennials.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to keep reminding you of this.
Yeah.
Anyone under 40.
Yeah, so. Actually, teenagers are not millennials.
Yeah.
So I'm making myself sound even worse and more out of touch. Thanks for listening, young people.
The youngins of the world.
Oh my goodness. What do you care about, little kids? Tell us.
Video games.
I'm going to just do the podcast in my old man voice.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Maybe if Dolly Parton can do her old man voice as me. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for writing in, Jen.
Yes. It's a really good question. Really good question.
And yeah.
She did a good deed.
Totally. She definitely handled it the way she should have, getting her registered, even though it was too late for her to register.
Yeah, that's what I was...
Or to vote in the midterms.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
But now she's ready for next time.
She's ready for the next time. Yeah. And Jen talked to her about the issues, let her form her own opinion on which party she wanted to belong to.
Yeah, very cool. I got a letter from a guy that I know who helped me with some things in my apartment. He put up my shelves. He's like a carpenter and an artist and a musician. He's also from the Midwest. I think he's from Wisconsin or Kansas.
One of those landlocked states.
Yeah, one of the flyovers, like Ohio. I wanted to find someone who was a straight white male that I didn't hate. What's so funny about that? So this is his letter. I think his perspective is really interesting. He writes in, "The first election I was able to vote in was Bush versus Gore. We all know how that went. After that election, followed shortly by 9/11, I got very conspiracy-minded. Without going into all the trivia, I'll say that I wasn't even confident that votes were counted at all. I know it sounds kooky, but there is actually a surprisingly high number of people who claim to feel this way. So I didn't vote through most of my 20s. Midterms, Bush versus Kerry... Another round of midterms. Then at some point around 2007, my dear older brother, who has always been a good influence on me, addressed the situation. First, he pondered if there is some faction within the government, some, quote, deep state or corporate interests attempting to influence proceedings on the highest level of our government. Let's acknowledge that it must indeed be very simple to manipulate some of the population. As long as there are sources for adequate trinkets, consumables, and other pacifiers, some folks will be lulled into complacency with ease. But how would might you, okay, convince an intelligent person not to participate in democracy? This would require a different kind of pacifier altogether, one just mysterious and entertaining enough to keep you up at night searching the dusty corners of the internet for stories of the hacking of voting machines and exit poll discrepancies. The most effective conspiracy, my brother contended, for rendering the discerning voter inert would be simply to convince them that there is a conspiracy to render them inert, convince them that their vote doesn't count, and they won't vote. That in itself was a compelling enough theory to change my tune for good. Voting is so easy and quick. I've been doing the research on local candidates and propositions and reminding friends to register to vote. I still sometimes have the suspicion that things aren't always on the up and up. Sure, I haven't given up my late night YouTube rabbit holery completely, but it doesn't keep me from the voting booths anymore. After all, someone may be counting.
Even if you do believe that there's
a deep state.
Yeah. And like, well, even without the deep state,
there's
definitely a certain level of underhanded
dastardliness
going on. There's
definitely like on the record corporate interests that we all know about.
Yeah.
So it's not too
crazy. His brother said was totally right about
like,
one of the easiest things to do to like sway a government is to convince the people that they should not participate.
Yeah.
Whether you think that your votes are counted or not. Participate.
Yeah.
But like we said earlier, don't just think that your responsibility ends when you leave the voting booth. Hold your politicians accountable, call your senators, whatever you have to do to stay engaged and stay
I had to call this week. The person that I voted for didn't win. Ohio is so red right now, it's depressing. But now it's illegal to have an abortion if the fetus has a heartbeat. So at 6 weeks, it becomes illegal, which is around the time that most women find out that they're pregnant. So yeah, they'll be committing felonies and they can face jail time up to a year and a huge fine. And yeah, it got through the House. It hasn't made it through the Senate, but the Senate is red too. So I'm not holding my breath on that. But I called twice and I didn't get through. I talked to some assistant and she was super dismissive. You gotta keep on them.
Yeah.
And it can feel really futile, but you know, you have to try.
I think a lot of people are engaged now in a way that they never really have been, which is obviously one sort of side effect of having a corrupt government, is people really feel the need to participate in a way they never have. So hopefully that momentum will keep up even as hands change in the future. I just hope that once things sort of settle down and we're back in theory, back in a place.
I hope we can get back to a place. Yeah. But yeah.
But hopefully that doesn't mean that everybody's like, oh, okay, I can relax now and I don't have to participate anymore.
I think I would like to hope that it will still be fresh in their memory this time.
Yeah.
Because it is a trauma that we are all living through right now. Yeah, so I thought his perspective was really interesting.
Yeah, so I have an email from Beth from Texas.
Okay.
So Beth says, it was an extremely busy election season here in Texas. Every house seemed to have yard signs, either Dohnin-Cruz or Beto or Allred or Sessions. I've never seen that kind of a buildup for a midterm election before. Obviously, it was a big one, as they all should be, but that's another conversation. Anyway, people even went as far as to burn, yes, burn,
what?
Beto yard signs.
No, they didn't.
Yes, of course it was Republicans who would pull that shit. She's
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, we can't be surprised by that.
No, if they're willing to burn like Jewish schools in Brooklyn, they're going to burn a sign.
Yeah, yeah. So. You Beto believe it.
Sorry. Tim, edit that out.
Sorry. That was me, not Beth. Anyway.
Thank you for clearing Beth's good name.
Yes. Don't blame Beth for my grandpa humor. So anyways, she says, there was definitely a divide in the city. Suburban neighborhoods north of Dallas seem to lean Republican, whereas more of our neighborhood and closer to the city center lean Democrat. There are also a lot of independents here in Dallas, and they were mostly pulling for Beto and Allred this time around. It's no wonder that Beto was so close to beating Cruz. Apparently, the closest race ran in 40 years.
Yeah. Wow. It's crazy.
Most of Dallas was upset that Cruz won over Beto, but of course, the entire state of Texas was responsible for that vote, and most of Texas is, well, on the right. We managed to elect the douchiest lieutenant government to ever exist, but I'm happy with our decision to keep Greg Abbott as governor. He was really qualified. He was the most qualified of the three running. At least 10 people showed up to our door before the election campaign, but there was nothing but political ads running on local TV stations. It was epic.
I bet, yeah.
And I feel it really made a difference. People were out there voting.
Yeah.
And that's not, you know, obviously that was amazing in Texas, but that was...
Everywhere.
I will say I have never seen a line like the line at my poll. I think even, like, obviously presidential elections, there's always a line. There's more people getting involved in presidential elections than midterms or primaries or whatever. But
yeah.
I could not believe the lines at my polling place. It was amazing. It was, I mean, it was kind of annoying, but at the same time, I was like, this is phenomenal.
That's cool.
Is so cool.
Yeah.
But so I'm glad to hear that it wasn't just Brooklyn that was sort of like really engaged. Beth says, there is no shortage of voting places here in Dallas. They are on every corner, it seems. We have one within walking distance of our house. Not sure if it was like this around the entire country, but I heard about Uber and Lyft offering free or discounted rides to the polling places on Election Day, which is super cool. Actually, my mom, that was like all over the internet that if you lived, I can't remember exactly how they worked out, whether you got a free ride or a discounted ride, but there was some kind of rule to it.
Okay.
But I saw my mom was like offering people rides on Facebook. like kind of strangers in her hometown.
Yeah.
She's on some like hometown forum and I something popped up and I was like, oh my God, my mom is offering rides. But so none of them took her up on it on Facebook. But she did end up giving a family a ride home from the polls. She said that she was on her way to the grade school where the elections are held and saw this family walking to the school with like a stroller.
Oh.
And then when she was in there, she like tapped the lady on the shoulder and was like, hey, like, you know, I saw you walking here. Do you want to ride home?
Oh, that's so nice.
Yes, please. Yeah. Obviously. I think it was raining. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Good for her for going to the polls, walking to the polls.
Yeah.
With a stroller in the rain.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And she said, I normally don't vote, but this year it seems so important that I walked here in the rain with my kids.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So Beth goes on to say, I heard this sweet story about a girl of 22 who has autism and doesn't drive. And she got a lift from Uber driver for free so she could go vote.
Wow.
So to our point, nobody has an excuse these days not to vote.
Yeah.
Of course, that's easy for me to say, being that I have a job where I can come and go as I want in a car and a polling place within a couple blocks of my house. But
yeah, my mom was telling me that she just got so many calls because Ohio is such a crucial battleground state that there are people who were offering to give her a ride because she's over 65 now. Wow. And she was kind of offended. She was like, No, I can get to the poll by myself.
Yeah.
And I was trying to explain to her, like, that's your job on the phone to like make a plan with someone.
Yeah.
And it's not just because you're over 65, like calm down. It was really, really cute. But yeah, they're giving people rides if they have difficulties getting to the polls. They're organizing that for them. Yeah. They're super organized in Ohio right now.
That's awesome.
It's great.
I mean, there were some things going on Election Day. There was a lot of, even here in Brooklyn, there were a lot of voting machines that weren't working properly, and there was super long lines and stuff, but people still were really engaged, and I hope that that momentum keeps up, and I hope that these sort of programs of companies who don't really have to be involved and don't have to help, staying involved and continuing that in the future.
It helps them. It's a good
look. It does. It is a marketing.
Yeah. It's a good look. And a good thing.
Yeah. Well, it's a good look because so many people are engaged right now. But if in the future people get complacent again, I hope that that doesn't change. That it's still
I really
it's still
hope a good people look. Won't. I don't think people are going to get complacent or as complacent as we did under Obama.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless he runs again.
Well, the thing is, for four years. when one group gets complacent, the other group gets
organized. Yeah,
which is what brought us the Tea Party in the first place. So
quietly every midterm they were just like taking out Democrats.
Yeah.
And we were
and look where we are now.
Yeah. Don't blame the victim.
Yeah.
So I have it's a really short thing from Twitter. Two elderly lesbians, a couple. So they're 70 years old. They're grandmothers.
Wow.
Yeah. They're adorable. Barbara and Elaine.
Hi, Barbara and Elaine.
So I was asking them about voting generally and if they can just tell me a little bit about their experience. So she wrote that she can vote at her local grocery store. And I'm just like, you can vote at your grocery store. Yes. So this is her response. Yes, our local Albertson set up early voting. We can also vote at libraries, parking lots, community centers all over the Las Vegas Valley and across Nevada. This year, early voting was from October 20th through November 2nd. All polling places, dates, and times were in the sample ballots and online, and no excuses for anyone to not get out and vote. They get to every neighborhood in the state with this.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so.
I wish all states were that.
Yeah.
Like, at your grocery store. Made things so much easier for everyone.
You have 3 weeks to vote at the grocery store. There's no excuse.
Crazy. Yeah. We'll see if New York State, I know that everybody thinks that New York State is this sort of like liberal bastion.
It's not.
You know, but really our Central New York, here upstate
is,
New York.
Is actually pretty restrictive.
Yeah. One really exciting thing that happened this midterm was that the Democrats took back the state Senate of New York.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of talk right now what that's going to mean for elections in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Board of Elections can kind of expand voting rights for New Yorkers, which
No,
would be
I
really
think
exciting.
They will.
Yeah.
They have a mandate to do so.
Yeah.
Yeah. If the House is blue, we can do it.
Should we play the audio and then have you read one last one?
Okay. So I'm just going to play it with my phone. This message is from my friend Adam. He's Australian. He lives on the Gold Coast. And we chat a lot on WhatsApp. So I told him, you need to send me a voice message to encourage others to do so. So here is Adam talking about Australian voting.
Hi, guys. Voting is compulsory in Australia at a state and federal level. At local levels, it varies from area to area. But where I live, it is compulsory at all three levels of government. As a result, about 95% of the population votes in every election. We also have preferential voting, which means that for, say, a House of Representatives election, the ballot may have five names on it. You mark those names from one to five according to your preference. If no candidate receives an absolute majority on the first count, then the second preferences are counted, and after the lowest vote getter is eliminated from the count, and their preferences are distributed to all the other candidates, and so on until someone gets an absolute majority. So in that instance, the leading vote getter gets less than 50%, but the second vote getter gets almost as many votes as them, and the lowest vote getter's preferences favour the second vote getter. The second vote getter, with a losing first preference vote, can still win the seat if they are popular with the minor party voters. It's a little different for the Senate. My state doesn't actually have an upper house. It only has a House of Representatives, but all the other states have Senates. But I do vote for the Senate at the federal level. For the Senate, it is actually a quota system. So there is preferential voting, but if you receive 14.8% of the vote, I believe it is now, it's roughly 15%, you will get a senator. There are six senators elected at every election for every state. Each state has 12, and the two territories have two senators each. Every election, six senators are elected, but because you do not need a majority, you just need to reach a quota. Minor parties are much more represented at the federal Senate level. In our federal Senate at the moment, two major parties, one of the major parties is technically a coalition of two parties, have roughly the same amount of senators. The Liberals and Nationals, the Conservative parties that really are the same party, have a slight majority over the Labour Party, which is the major left-leaning party. But the Australian Green Party, for instance, has nine federal senators out of 76 senators. They are a far-left party. So there is a bit more minor party representation, the problem being that then of all the other minor parties, there's probably another 12 senators from 10 other parties who mostly are crazy people. So they, if they decide to work together, then you have, you know, 10 crazy people holding the balance of power in the Senate, which is unfortunate, but it does allow for minor parties to be represented. There is, for compulsory voting, there is a fine if you do not vote, unless there's extraordinary circumstances due to illness or emergency situations, things like that. So you have to provide an excuse. However, there are ways to get out of it. If you don't actually have to vote, you can just show up and take your ballot and throw it in the box without marking it, and there's no way they would effectively be able to fine you at that point. I do know a person, who I will not reveal their name, who was accidentally left off the electoral rolls at some point in the past and has yet to be replaced. And so as far as the Australian Electoral Commission knows, he does not exist. And he has taken that as license to not vote. And he does not receive a fine because his name is not on the list to be marked off. And he thinks that's great. I think that's kind of shirking his civil duty, but that's how it goes. The only other thing I would say about Australian voting is, gerrymandering. You guys have problems with sort of political appointees and the various state ruling parties having undue influence over the way elections are handled. In Australia, everything is done by paper ballot, except in very, very limited circumstances. So you can audit votes from beginning to end as a paper ballot. All elections at the federal level are governed by the Australian Electoral Commission, which is run by public servants who are by design impartial, and everything is sort of apportioned from a very coldly logical level, at least in theory. There is obviously some political influence over any system, but but compared to the American system, it is much more robotic, and nobody's putting their hands on the scales too egregiously as we're seeing in the current midterm elections in America. Okay, I think that's all I have to say.
That was great.
Yeah.
I actually have a friend, an Australian friend, Jesse, that sent me this cute little cartoon. I think it's like 3 or 4 panels that kind of breaks down preferential voting and how it works in a really kind of easily understood way. So I'll try and share that on our Instagram when this episode
goes live.
That's
what Maine has.
Yeah, which is so cool. And yeah. I think a lot of states are going to start
adopting that too.
California
might get it as well in their next election. It's coming soon.
Yeah. To a state.
It's the way to do it because it eliminates, well, maybe it doesn't eliminate nasty campaigning, but if you have to choose, if you have to rank everyone, the ranked voting helps to eliminate some of the negative campaigning because you have to choose people. Like if someone runs a really nasty campaign, you can just put them at 5 and that automatically drops them down. So I think it's good.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
It's a really cool. When I first heard about that system, I was like, I couldn't really wrap my head around it. But the more I learn about it, the more I really think it's a great way to do it.
Yeah, if she has an infographic, that would be helpful.
Yeah, it's like a kind of a cartoon,
okay,
sort of like a comic strip thing, but it breaks it down in a really easy way to understand. So
yeah,
that will be on our Instagram, Beyond Reproach Pod.
Can I say one thing about it?
Yeah.
Of course.
So I'm really excited about preferential voting.
Right? Isn't
it
great?
I think it's amazing.
Fair vote.
Yeah, it's fair, and it also ensures that everybody gets their vote counted in some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from his message that we were just listening to, I don't know if that like came across if you're not familiar with it, but essentially if your candidate is not one of the finalists and they receive the least amount of votes, then you have a second choice. So the candidate with the least amount of votes is disqualified, and then your vote goes back in for your second choice, and on until you come out with a finalist.
Yeah.
In the United States, people are getting elected just on the strength of their base.
Yeah.
And if you are voting for someone like a third party candidate and that person isn't in the running to actually win, you know, you get demonized for voting for someone
your
like Ralph Nader or someone.
Yeah.
Whereas in this system, your candidate would be eliminated, and then your vote for your second choice would go back into the system.
Yeah.
That's all.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people complain about the fact that America is a two-party system and that it doesn't feel like there's enough room for people who are moderates or have other points of view, Green Party, whatever it is. So this is a way that you can vote for a third party and still have a vote that would be
counted
for, you know, one of the two parties at the same time.
Yeah.
Which is, it's still kind of confusing, but again, we'll share this little comic.
So this comes from our friend Christine. She writes, "Hi, Beyond Reproach. I'm a youngish married woman who has lived in New York City for the past 11 years. I lived in Bushwick, Brooklyn for the first 5 years before moving to Ridgewood, Queens in 2012. When I moved, my polling place in Queens turned out to be literally across the street, and I found myself voting a lot more, including local elections and primaries that I just couldn't get to before because of how far I had to go to reach my polling place in Bushwick. I acknowledge early voting as an option, but for me, it's easier to pop by a physical polling place before heading to work. I honestly prefer the experience of voting in person. I feel like a lot of working people in New York feel the time crunch of daily life and responsibilities, and having easier access to polling places, having voting expanded to more than one day, and even gasp making Election Day a national holiday would help more people get a chance to vote, and would decrease the effects of things like rainy days, broken machines, and life events on voter turnout. I'm excited by what I saw on midterm election day. People generally seemed excited to vote, and the historic voter turnout numbers were inspiring. But solid voter turnout shouldn't be a nice or rare surprise. It should be a standard. Hopefully, as we address more ways to get people to the polls, we can start to see a more genuine read of the country's politics as opposed to the often skewed results favoring voters with more extreme viewpoints. Thanks. Recently actuated woman in Ridgewood." Rar. Did WR. I love her.
Yeah, thanks, Christine.
Yeah.
That, I mean, the point about having polling places that are close to you is really...
It's important.
It's important. I mean, it's important in New York because people tend not to have vehicles, and so you're walking to the polls, you're taking a bus to the polls. And in more populated neighborhoods, obviously, there are going to be more polling places. But as you get out further into neighborhoods that have fewer people, the likelihood that your polling place is going to be further away is definitely greater.
Yeah.
But then when you get into the suburbs, if you are somebody
has a car.
Yeah.
So.
But if you are somebody who is lower income and you don't have a car.
If you don't have a car, then
that puts you in a really shitty position.
Yeah, definitely. Especially if it's far from the bus or you don't have anyone who can take you. It should be more convenient. It should be like in Nevada. It should be done
absolutely
at libraries or grocery stores. Mm-hmm. I think she said parking lots. I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
Seriously? Is that safe? But
we'll
thank
see.
You.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see how things can improve now that we have the state Senate. We'll see in New York if things improve. Hopefully things will improve all over the country.
We should get the same day voter registration like they have in Illinois, like they have in Montana and a whole bunch of other places, weird places like Oklahoma, I think has it.
That was great. Thank you everyone who wrote in. These are all super valid points. And I think that as we do these episodes, we're all going to kind of learn from each other and together as everybody kind of has different points and different thoughts on how things work.
Yeah, thank you for sending us your feedback.
Yeah.
I encourage more people to send us voice messages, but keep them under 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Or even two.
Yeah.
If you keep them under two, maybe we'll give you something.
We'll give you a gold star.
Yes.
Or maybe
we'll give
something
you our admiration.
Yes. But yeah, seriously, thank you to everyone who wrote in, and we hope that more people write in for the next one. I love how many of our friends participated in this one. Obviously, we don't have a ton of listeners just yet that aren't our friends, but anyone who's listening who we don't know personally, please do feel more than welcome. Or if you do know us, still feel free to write in, but like, we really do want to hear from you. So I want to talk a little bit about what our next topic will be for Minisode 3. Basically, we want to discuss the way our education system handles teaching students about slavery and racism in America's past.
Oh, yes.
Our thinking, and we did have a discussion about this, or many discussions, really. Our thinking is that if we, as a country, want to sort of heal wounds and move forward and really address racism on a serious level, the only way to really do that is to accept our past and sort of really face where we come from and face what we have done in the past as a country, as a nation.
Yeah, I think it's important to look at our history with a critical lens,
but
like a real lens, not like the Disney Vaseline lens.
Well, that's exactly it. And, you know, when I've been to places like Berlin, they have a past that would be very embarrassing and they could easily want to gloss over it and pretend it didn't happen or whitewash it and move on. But they don't. In Berlin, there are monuments and museums everywhere, all over the place, to the horrors of World War II and all of the horrible things that happened there.
Yeah.
But the idea is that if you're somebody who lives there, you cannot ignore the fact that that happened. And as a child, you have to sort of be like, okay, this is part of our past.
Yeah.
How do we make sure that this doesn't
happen
again?
There's no statues like saluting Hitler.
It's illegal. You can't.
Confederate monuments we have here.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, that's our history. It's like, you guys, we're on the wrong side of it.
What do you call it? Swastikas
are
illegal.
And, it's illegal.
And then look at the way the government works in Germany now. It's like the whole point is to try and get as far from that as possible because it is such a part of their life to sort of accept that that's where they come from.
Yeah, they've learned from their history.
So our thinking is that if our schools did a better job teaching kids where we come from as a nation, future generations would be able to start the healing process in a real way, in a way that we're not really trying to do now.
Not ignoring it would make it better.
Yeah.
Less bad.
I mean, we're speaking from a place where we were in high school 20 years ago.
How dare you?
Sorry, guys. Stephanie was in high school 9 years ago. 5 years ago. Okay. I was in high school 20 years ago.
Thank you.
Obviously, school teachers can't pretend that slavery didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So it is discussed.
Wait, you just learned about it in high school?
Not just high school, but I'm saying grade school.
Grade school, yeah.
It isn't like we're pretending it didn't exist. However, it is not really addressed.
No, it's glossed over.
It's very glossed over. Yeah. It's very whitewashed. Or it was when I was in school.
Similar to chapters about Native Americans.
Yes.
We talk about it, but it's glossed over. It's like, moving on.
Yeah. But this might not be the case in some districts. It might not be the same case in some classrooms.
Yeah.
Basically, we're hoping that for our next mini episode, anyone out there that has kids can talk to us about their thoughts on this. And if you feel the schools are teaching your kids enough, are they not? What are they teaching them? Do you think that this is being handled in an appropriate way? What age do you think is appropriate to talk about it? Do you know of any resources? Mm-hmm. What do you remember about learning on your own in school? Or how did you learn about these things later in life if you didn't feel like you knew enough about where we come from as a nation?
Yeah.
If you're a teacher, I would love to hear from a teacher on this. If there's any teachers out there listening, please do write us. What are your thoughts on the limitations of textbooks and curriculum?
Yeah, I'd be curious to know if the teaching is different in the southern states.
Yeah.
Versus like in the north. I know places like New Orleans, there's such a history there.
Yeah.
And even New York, I mean, Wall Street.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't learn about that in grade school, that like they sold humans on Wall Street.
Yeah.
They built Wall Street, like enslaved people. Like, I didn't learn that in class. I learned that in college, and I was irate. So yeah, I'd be interested to know the regional differences.
Yeah.
If there are regional, there should be, I think.
If you're listening and you have some thoughts on this, we would love to hear from you. Don't feel like you have to be a passive listener.
Your own experience would be really interesting to hear. Send us a message.
Racism in our country definitely doesn't end at slavery. Obviously, there's a lot more that went on after slavery was abolished. Obviously, they did teach about segregation and Jim Crow, but like barely.
Barely.
So.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So those things obviously could also be addressed better. And what are your thoughts on that as well? So.
It's a big question.
Yeah. It's definitely a heavy topic, and it might be a lot to ask for people to process this and write into us, but we really do hope that you take the time and.
Yeah.
Get in touch.
Send us a voice message.
Send us a tweet. Whatever
Ooh,
you
yes.
want. Anything.
Slide into our DMs.
Yes, exactly.
Alrighty.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
This has been Beyond Reproach, the mini-sode.
Yes, we'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.
Bye.